Good deal. Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2. Would you turn there with me? We're going to, in your bulletin, we're going to get to 2, 3, and part of 4. Do you believe it? Yes or no? Yeah. Okay. We're going to do it a little bit differently. Chapter 2, starting with verse 9, we're going to go through it in sections. I'll read it, I'll comment. Chapter 3, we're going to read the whole thing at one time. Steve Wyatt is going to read it. He's been practicing all the Hebrew names. And then chapter 4, we're going to read it in sections as well. And I'll comment some more, and then we'll, by the Lord's grace and through His mercy, we'll make some applications for our lives today. So Nehemiah chapter 2. Nehemiah has been recounting so far in this book, written by Ezra, his friend. He's been describing how the good hand of God has been upon him. You see that in chapter 2, verse 8. Remember that Nehemiah is a Jew. He lives far, far, far away from Israel, from Jerusalem, from his people. And he is serving the king of the world. Okay, he's serving the king of the world, folks. Anybody? What is his job in the kingdom of the Artaxerxes? He's the cupbearer. A very, very important, critical, trustworthy job that gives him constant accessibility before the king. Every time the king puts up a cup of wine to his mouth, Nehemiah has already risked his life and tasted it. Nehemiah is in Susa. That's the winter capital, the winter retreat for all Persian kings. It was conducive to the winter weather. And he receives bad news from family and friends when they return from Israel to Susa. And the bad news is this. The people of the land are in great trouble and shame. This is all chapter 1. Walls have been destroyed. And the gates have been destroyed by fire. Remember all that last week? The people in the city are discouraged, and the city itself is in shambles. Partly, it's in shambles because of a letter that the king that Nehemiah serves, Artaxerxes, had written a letter to Israel many, many years earlier, perhaps 13 years earlier, and had told them to cease, to desist from building up the walls of the city. There was a group of enemies, a group of neighbors, who hated the Jews, and they had written King Artaxerxes a letter and said, you know what, these are rebellious, seditious people, you better check into it. Artaxerxes checked into it, and he ordered all the walls to stop being rebuilt, and probably in their anger, because they came violently, told the Jews to stop. They probably destroyed some of the walls that had already been previously destroyed 150 years earlier when Nebuchadnezzar took over the country. So that's the context here when we get to chapter 2. Nehemiah, in chapter 1, when he hears this bad news, when he hears this sad news, his response is to be sad. Remember that? He mourns. He cries. He fasts. He prays to the God of heaven. And he does this not just for 1 or 2 days or 3 days, not for a week. He does it for 4 months, praying, fasting, mourning, crying over the situation of his people who live far away and his city. And every day he prays that God would grant him mercy. God would give him success in the sight of the king that he saw daily. And he would pray, Lord, is it today? Is it today? Is it today that I go before the king and ask for my people? Chapter 1, verse 11, why don't you look there, he says this, O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Now I was a cupbearer to the king. And the Lord answers Nehemiah's burning desire to honor God's name by rebuilding the Jerusalem walls. And he grants him favor in the sight of the king. So much so that the king reverses his earlier edict that he had made probably during the time Ezra first arrived. on the scene, and he gives him permission to rebuild the walls. Remember, he had said, don't build the walls. And now he says, you can rebuild the walls, and here's the money to help you rebuild it. And he gives them something else as well. He brings them protection. And so Nehemiah undertakes this awesome task of bringing safety and security and hope once again to the city of Jerusalem. And so we're going to start reading with verse 9 of chapter 14 of chapter 2. Okay, follow along with me as I read. Just a few verses to start off with. Then I came to the governors of the province beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. Not only had Artaxerxes given him the power and the finances and the authority to undertake this job of rebuilding the walls, he also gave, well, protection. He sent some of his soldiers and horses to walk with Nehemiah all the way to Jerusalem. Remember, they were traversing maybe 1,000 miles over mountains and deserts. The enemies of Yahweh, and consequently anybody who works for Yahweh or who works in favor of Yahweh's peoples, the enemies are still working against Yahweh and his servants. It says that in verse 10. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite servants heard this, it displeased them greatly that someone had come to seek the welfare of the people of Israel. These enemies were not pleased with the fact that somebody was now working in favor of Israel, the people of God. They had, up to this point, enjoyed the reproach and the shame that was on the people of God for living in a city that was run down and in shambles. They were working against God's people, and that had been true ever since Israel got back into the land 100 years earlier. Always opposition from the enemies of God. Verse 11 of chapter 2. Excuse me. So I went to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I rose in the night, I and a few men with me, and I told no one what my God had put into my heart to do for Jerusalem. There was no animal with me but the one which I rode. The desire for Nehemiah, you see this in verse 12, to rebuild the city of Jerusalem, to undertake this dangerous journey, to leave his job as cupbearer with the intent of one day going back and to help and bring hope to the trodden people of God, was placed in his heart by God himself. You see that in verse 12? And I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. Earlier, we've seen in chapter 1, verse 11, that Nehemiah delighted in the fear of God's name. And when he delighted in God's name, he feared God, God gave him a desire in his heart. It reminds me of Psalm 34, or 37:4. You might know it. It says, delight yourself in the Lord, what? And he will what? Give you the desires of the heart. Sometimes we misinterpret that. We say, well, I'll do what God wants me to do, and then he'll give me what I want. That's not what that verse is saying. He says, when you delight in God, he's going to give you the desires that he wants, and he will place them in your heart. And God wanted his city to be rebuilt, and Nehemiah was a man who delighted in the fear of God. And so he said, that man is going to have my desire written on his heart, and he's going to rebuild those walls for me. So Nehemiah will tell us what he did after those 3 days after he arrived. Verse 13, I went out by night by the valley gate to the Dragon Spring and to the Dung Gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that were broken down and its gates that had been destroyed by fire. Then I went on to the Fountain Gate and to the King's Pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. Then I went up in the night by the valley and inspected the wall, and I turned back and entered the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing. And I had not told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest who were to do the work. Then I said to them, you see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned? Come, let us build the walls of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision. And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also of the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, let us rise up and build.
So they strengthened their hands for the good work. But when Sambalot the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, servant of Geshem the Arab, heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, "What is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" And I replied to them, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build, but you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem." So Nehemiah gives us the details of this survey of the city that he took by night secretly on an animal. Doesn't tell us what kind of animal it was. Probably wasn't a camel. Most likely it wasn't a horse. I would suggest it was probably a donkey. And he begins to walk around it. And I had a map that I was going to project, and I forgot to do it. Okay? I promise you I'll bring it next week, okay? And I'll show you all the different gates here that it goes to. But he goes out the western wall, and he goes down, he goes in the, out the valley gate, and starts walking around the bottom part of the city, the south part of the city. He's expecting the walls the whole time, at night, okay? So he's not getting, maybe it was a full moon, I don't know. But he's expecting the walls, maybe he had his flashlight. Oh, that's right, they didn't have flashlights. But he's expecting the wall. He goes to the Dung Gate. That's an interesting name. Why do you suppose it was called the Dung Gate? That's where they took all their trash out, okay? And underneath that was a valley, and it was like a... in fact, you might have heard of this. It was a valley where they took all the trash and they burned it, and it burned continually. Burned continually. And from that, well, I'll talk about that next week, okay? And then he goes around, and he's coming up, now he's down the south side, and he's coming up the east side, and he goes to the fountain gate, okay? And there's no room in the fountain gate for him to pass. It's destroyed, okay? He has to get off his animal, and he starts walking up it, and he goes all the way up to the king's pool, okay? And then he turns around and he starts heading back, okay? Then he comes all the way back around and he goes back into the valley gate. And situation is just as described to him by his brother and their friends when they came to Susa many, many months earlier. Now, I'm not going to allegorize these gates. Many, many people have, and they've spoken and they preached and they allegorize the gate and they mean different things. But that's not the point of Nehemiah, okay? Nehemiah, the point is for him to take the trip is to show us that the gates are really destroyed. They are in bad shape. Work needs to be done, and a lot of work needs to be done. He even said so. See that? You see the trouble we are in, how Jerusalem lies in ruins with its gates burned. So after this couple-hour trek in the night, he comes to the conclusion that the city is in bad shape. And then he encourages the people, "Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer suffer derision." God had placed this desire in his heart to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. But Nehemiah, after the survey, realizes this is something I cannot undertake by myself. This is too big for one man. It would take me a lifetime to rebuild this. And so what he is doing, he's trying to motivate, mobilize other people with the desire that God has given him in his heart. And he points out the obvious. We are in trouble. Basically, we are the laughing stock of all of our neighbors. And if we are going to cease from being a city scorned and made fun of and poked fun of, we are going to have to work together for the reconstruction of the walls and gates. And why can't we do this? Because he gives them a testimony. God's good hand has been upon me. I have authority of the king of the world. He's giving me money. We're going to do this. Verse 18, let me read that again. "And I told them of the hand of my God that had been upon me for good, and also the words that the king had spoken to me. And they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' So they strengthened their hand for the good work." And so God not only moves in Nehemiah's heart, he begins to move in the people's heart. He begins to stir their hearts as well. And their hands are strengthened, the resolve. It grows. And they are going now to rebuild the walls and the gates. Something that they had ceased to do many, many years early because of the letter of the king. That desire has now been fanned into a flame again by Nehemiah's passion that God has placed in his heart. Let me continue reading. I'm going to read it again. "But when Sambalot the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite, servant of Geshem the Arab, heard of it, they jeered at us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing that you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?'" They're really not interested in the king, are they? No. They're interested in discouraging the people and impeding their work. And Nehemiah is going to have no part of their little plan to discourage the people of God in the work that God has called him to do. And so he replies. He says, "The God of heaven will make us prosper, and we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or claim in Jerusalem." Basically, Nehemiah says, God is in charge. Ultimately, we will prosper because God is ahead of this. But we will work. God is sovereign. God has decreed that Jerusalem will be rebuilt because in God's redemptive plan, the city needs to be rebuilt because the Messiah will come. One of those gates that has been destroyed will receive the Christ. Remember the day when he came riding in on a donkey? He went through one of those gates, the east gate. That gate will be rebuilt. The walls will be in place. The temple will be kept safe until the Messiah arrives. Interesting, after Jesus Christ dies, rises again, what happened to the temple? It was destroyed again, wasn't it? And so God preserved the temple all those years for the coming of his Son, Jesus Christ the Messiah. After Jesus Christ the Messiah came and accomplished the purposes of God for Israel, didn't need the temple anymore. So God says, Nehemiah, understand that God will build this temple, but we've got to work too. We're just not going to sit on our hands and do nothing and watch God sort of magically have the walls come up. God is sovereign, but man is responsible. That's important for all of us to understand. You know, we get sick, right? We pray about it. But then we do what? We go to the doctor, don't we? Well, some people don't. Men, particularly. Yeah, I'm sorry. But we should go to the doctor, shouldn't we? God is sovereign, but man is responsible. And so Nehemiah will now, in chapter 3, detail precisely how the people begin to arise and build the walls, okay? And so I've asked Steve Wyatt to come up and read chapter 3. Follow along with him. You don't need to stand unless he wants you to. It will take a couple minutes here, and we'll follow along with him in the text.